boys and girls. London calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is putting the stars. London calling. Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, co-host, and with me today will be David Hulley and Giannis Janaeus. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Leeds United tomorrow night, Wednesday night, it is Wednesday night, at Craven Cottage. Before that, we'll have another segment of the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which includes us debating questions I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for the fans to comment on. And as always, I have two really good ones, and we will be going through that as well. Also want to mention that that the video clip of Kit Simons is now available on the FulhamFC.com website. If you're looking for the latest interview with Kit Simons, is actually on the website. We will be playing the audio clip of that during the show. Looking forward to that. You know, again, as we record this, this is Tuesday afternoon where I am, and Tuesday night in England. Just so you know, that's so we do have the audio clip. Look forward to playing it because I think there might be some interesting things in there for us to discuss as well. All right, I'm going to bring on one of my co-hosts who's on the line with me. David, how you doing, my friend?
Hello, Russ. Hello, everyone who's listening in. Yeah, great to be back. I wasn't coming on today, but it's good I became free. I've got an opportunity, and I'm excited to do the show with you and really excited to do it with Giannis because we, believe it or not, haven't done a show together for God knows how long. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Well, looking forward to doing it with the two of you, and Giannis should be dialing in shortly, and we'll be joining us. It should be fun, David. It definitely should be fun. But listen, let's get going while we wait for Giannis. You know, in my section, I call it College Talk Quick Shots. Just again, a couple of quick subjects for us just to get going here. So let's start with this. Ross McCormack has been called up to play for Scotland against Northern Ireland on March 25th. What are your thoughts on this for Ross, David?
Well, I think for any player, it's an honour to be selected for your country, obviously. So it shows that, I guess, that he's getting noticed as well by people. You know, and he is a very, like, you know, he's an interesting player. He does put a lot of hard work in, a lot of effort. Sometimes he can be a bit frustrating, I guess, but he's obviously got talent and skill, and it's great that he's getting some recognition for that.
Absolutely. You know, listen, it matters who you talked to about Ross McCormack. I personally think he's been a success for a Fulham Football Club. Again, it doesn't all show up with the goals, but it's always good to play for your country, and I'm happy for him, and I'm glad that he has this opportunity again, and hopefully will shine. I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. I know everyone is always concerned, David, about injury, but it comes with the territory. But he should play, though. Don't you agree with that?
I mean, it would be a very sad state of affairs if you get selected for your country and you refuse to play, or you turn it down, or you don't want to play. I mean, it's an ultimate honour, isn't it? It has to be, I think. And
absolutely.
You can't worry too much about injuries. Otherwise, you'd never play at all. I mean, you know, you could get injured in any game, couldn't you? I know. I suppose the more you play, the more the chances are, but. But no, I mean, it can happen in any game. It can happen in any training session, an injury. So you can't go through life worrying about the risks. Otherwise, you wouldn't do anything, really.
I couldn't agree with you more, David. And, you know, and again, whenever I hear of a player wanting to play for his country, I'm all for it. And yes, you could get injured at any time. So it does happen. Listen, it's happened with several Fulham players, but it's part of, you know, part of the deal. You should take advantage if you get that opportunity to play for your country. I know if I ever played, I'd love that honor, and that's why I'm happy for Ross to be playing for Scotland. It's a, you know, again, it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a very good thing. Let's just hope, you know, all the players that when they go away on international duty come back, you know, safe and sound. Sometimes they get injured, and it's just, you know, it's part of the deal. You know, you just deal with it because you could get injured at any time, my friend. All right, David, just a little update. Giannis is actually just rebooting his computer, should be joining us shortly. Just let me know. So in the meantime, let's move on. Let's go to subject number two in Cottage Talk Quick Shots. And this is an interesting one. I hope Giannis can come on for this because it's something that I know we've talked about in the past. Paul Warburton in a Get West London article mentioned that Kit Simons has ruled out a permanent move for Seiko Fofana on loan from Man City. He's on loan to Fulham until the end of the season. What are your thoughts on this and the play of Fofana so far in general, David?
Well, has he ruled him out because we're not interested, or has he ruled him out because Man City, there's no deal on that one? You know, he could be saying that, I guess, that it's just not possible, it's not on the cards. I mean, he's been initially and ever-present, really. Latterly, I suppose since Tynecliffe's been back and more available, he's featured a bit less, even though, you know, we've lost LVC as well. He hasn't been starting as much. But I think he's been positive in the main for Fofana. You know, he's a young lad. Yeah, he's a bit rash at times. His control's a bit funny. But, you know, he's the sort of, when he gets the ball and starts running with it, he's an exciting player. He can look dangerous. He's got a good bit of skill, obviously. And nothing to suggest he won't be a great player, you know, when he gains a bit of experience and everything else. I mean, you know, I never thought that it was going to be a permanent move, really. I don't think these sort of players tend to become available, really. The big clubs like to keep hold of the talent, and at least for another few years, perhaps, and then, you know, see what happens. So, you know, I'm not too disappointed, because I didn't have expectations that he would stay anyway. I just think we just need to utilise him to the best we can while we have him. So, you know, and that was, you know, like on Saturday, you know, he made a difference when he came on.
He did.
And, you know, we'll be talking about the team again in a bit. And I would imagine he'll be pushing for a chance to start on tomorrow. So, which would be good, because he's fairly fresh after not playing too much on Saturday.
Yeah. Listen, I hear you on that, and I just see a player that keeps on getting better and better. Yes, he's green. You know, we would use the term, you know, needs more experience as being green, and you can see it. But, you know, it's funny. I think he's going to score. You know, I keep saying it. I expect Seiko Fofana to score. He's getting closer and closer. And the article actually talks a little bit about that fact, you know, that hopefully he will be scoring soon, and then, you know, the fact that Manchester City, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, is very high on him, and that hasn't changed. That's why I think, you know, this is coming up, is because he is their player, David. And, you know, they are, you know, they look at him as one for the future. So, you know, let's make the best of him while he is with Fulham, and watch him progress as a player. Well, guys, David, it looks like Giannis is with us. I'm going to bring him on. Giannis, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hello! Hello!
Welcome back, Giannis. How you doing?
Good. I actually just listened to Kit's interview with Sarah for a second time. Sarah, brilliant as ever. And I had to have a good laugh at what he was talking about.
Well, we're going to play that a little bit later. I got that loaded into the show, and I just got the audio clip just as we're about to start the show. So we're going to play it. I definitely want your thoughts on that when we get there.
Sure. Sounds good. Hi, David.
Hi, Giannis. Good to be back with you at last.
What's going on?
Nothing much, my friend. Listen, we had just started the show. You know, I was just talking a little bit about Ross McCormack, you know, again, being called up to Scotland. I want to get your thoughts on that, but I also want to get your thoughts about Seiko Fofana, because, again, there was an article yesterday in Get West London basically saying, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, that a permanent move is not going to happen for him, and we have him until the end of the season. But, I'm, you know, again, you and I have talked about this. I want to get your thoughts on Fofana, the player Fofana, the loanee, I guess you could say, from Manchester City, and also Ross McCormack. A bunch of stuff I want to get your thoughts on.
Well, the McCormack thing, I think he's gone a little bit off the boil recently, to be honest. And ironically, that seems to coincide with Smith starting to play, but there you go. The Fofana thing, well, he's City's player, and I'm wondering if maybe one of the options on the table is to see if they can get a year loan next year. Personally, I'd rather get a more experienced central midfielder in, someone who's used to the muck and grind of the Championship, and someone who's going to chip in with a few goals as well. Because as you look at the top teams, they all seem to score goals in bunches. And we're not really productive enough in terms of goal output from the midfield. So whoever's manager next year, and I'll assume it's not Kit, will look to purchase players in the centre of the park that can at least contribute in their own way, as well as creating chances for other players to score as well.
No, good stuff there, Yanis. Good stuff on both subjects, on Ross and also on Seiko Fofana. And you and I have talked about him before. So, you know, it's interesting because I was thinking the same thing. Maybe, who knows, maybe they could, you know, get another year-long loan. But would that be the best move for Fulham Football Club, knowing that he's never going to be a permanent member of the club? You could be right about that. Maybe they need a more seasoned player in midfield.
I'd say no. Okay. I know he's been playing recently, but I'd say no. I just think that if we've had nearly a year to analyze the best teams in the division, and they all seem to have certain things. They seem to have a lot of pace wide. They seem to all have a big man up front. They seem to have a lot of creativity in the midfield. I mean, case in point is Bournemouth. And Fofana, for me, is he reminds me a little bit of a horse. I'm just trying to think. And, you know, horses are good, but he's exactly warm-blooded. And we need a little bit more mobility in the centre of the park, and I said a little bit more creativity. Oh, bring Danny Murphy out of retirement. Does anybody want to suggest that one? Man, do we miss him. Christ. We do,
Yanis. It's funny because when we go on the College Talk Controversy Roundtable and we discuss the decline of Fulham Football Club, part of that decline is when Danny Murphy left, in my opinion. But we'll get to that in a little bit. That's going to take us to the College Talk Controversy Roundtable. And, David, I'm going to start with you. Again, we're going through all the positions because eventually we're going to do an all-time Fulham starting 11, but now we are on to left back. So I put this on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Who has been the best left back you have seen in a Fulham shirt, David?
Oh, it's a difficult position, left back, isn't it? It's always been a problem position in a way because it's that sort of, I don't know, it's a unique position, I think. People can play right back. But you need a left footer to play left back, really. Although for many years we had Les Strong, I think, who was right footed, who used to flip between left and right back, but mainly we saw him at left back, and he was a great servant for the club, Les Strong. I never really appreciated him as a player at the time, but you know, he was a fair player, really. And when you look back some of the clips from the cup final season and stuff, you know, he was quite a good player, really. We then had, after that, Kevin Locke. I'm sure, Yanis, you remember all these as well. And Kevin Locke had a lovely left foot. I wouldn't say he was the best left back, but, you know, he fitted in pretty well in a good team. And he was an expert from set pieces. He actually did score free kicks and penalties. He had an excellent penalty record. He jumped forward, and, you know, there's a lot of years where we've had left backs come and go. I'm sure you remember people like we had Frank Quadra for one season or something, and, you know, we had Jerome Bonisell in the Premier League. We had people who never really got in. Oh, and Nicholas Jensen as well. You remember him? I think I was quicker than him, actually, at running. So we had a few ropey ones. And really, it all comes down to not very many. I think Rufus Brevitt, you know, he was someone who came with us, you know, when we were starting our journey towards the Premier League. And we thought, yeah, he's a good, solid guy. Will he actually be good enough with us? And then we got, in the Championship, and he was still there, and, you know, and he just got better and better, Rufus Brevitt, really, even to the point of in the Premier League. And the only other real contender for the, you know, regular left-back spot was Konchesky. And I don't think you really appreciate it until he's gone that, you know, what a difficult position it's been to fill for Fulham. You could argue Chris Baird. He played at left-back and scored those two great goals at Stoke as well. But he was someone who fitted in everywhere. So I think for me, it does really come down to the three main stalwarts have been Strong, Konchesky and Brevitt at left-back. And I hope I'm not missing someone out who was superbly brilliant, and I'm doing them a disservice. I'm sure there probably was someone there. Robbie Herrera, we love Robbie Herrera, but in terms of, I suppose, overall ability, he was great at the time, but, you know, not at such a higher level. So for me, I don't know. It's between those three. I think I'm going to, just purely because he's a club legend, I'm going to go for Les Strong.
Okay. Very good there, Dave. Very good. Yanis, how about you?
Les Strong for me. And I think this is an easy one because he was two-footed. If you remember when he played, it was over 400 games, very, very rarely got beaten for pace. Good tackler of a ball. I thought his awareness was always pretty good. He was a decent passer of a ball. and pretty even temperament, didn't get many bookings either. So, I mean, looking back, I don't think the closest I would put in terms of stature would probably be Brevet, but I think Strong was the best left-back we've had at this club. Although I'm sure people, I mean, someone like Roger might be listening, there might be defenders from back in the 60s and 50s to remember, but for me, in my lifetime, it's been less Strong.
Okay, very interesting. Very good. What's interesting, again, I have a few comments, not many comments, but no one mentioned Les Strong, which is interesting. I'm going to start with Chris Lewis. He said, Konchesky, Brevet had character, but all-out consistency, it has to be Conch. Steve Leahy said, Rufus. Kevin James said, Konchesky. William Kennedy said, Konchesky. Gareth Brooks said, Rufus. Let's see, Steve Butter said, Rufus. Dean Rozier said, we've never been blessed with amazing left backs. It's funny, that's what we're talking about, some good players, but no greats. In my time of supporting, I would say the best would be Bocanegra. Julian Payne said Robbie Herrera, and that's basically the comments. And Giannis, I'm going to go back to, what are your thoughts about so many people saying Konchesky and then also Rufus? You know, it's funny because, again, that's when I first started was with Konchesky, so I understand it. I actually think Konchesky was underrated.
Well, Rufus, I mean, Rufus was consistent. That's the one thing about him. I mean, I'd call him a good, solid left back. Konchesky was good, and then I think in the last year the wheels fell off, and he started to lose discipline. And I think the makings of a good defender is someone who's going to be tough and do things right, but also not lack the discipline. And I think Konchesky, by the time he left, I think he'd worn out his sell-by date. And he's done okay at Leicester. It's a bit odd looking at him having hair on his head as well. But to me, and actually, it's funny, if he's the best left-back we've ever had, we must have had a sorry bunch of left-backs. I mean, and that's no disrespect to Konchesky. Konchesky was a solid left-back who played for us in the Premier League. I'm not going to take that away from him. But really, if that is the best we've had in 135 years of history is Paul Konchesky. Woo. it's a wonder we ever got out of league, you know, the fourth division or League Two. So for me, hands down, it's Les Strong. Konchesky, okay. You know, served, he was decent, but not a patch on Les. Not for me.
Oh, okay, not a problem. And you know, again, it's an individual's time with watching film. So that might be a factor here, Giannis, you know, because that's the way I phrased it. You know, in the time that you've been a Fulham supporter, who has been the best? And that's, you know, why, again, you know, if you're asking me, the time that I've been watching them, it's been Konchesky. But obviously I don't go back as far as you guys do, and that's why I appreciate what you guys bring to the table, because you can really talk about more of the history of Fulham Football Club than I can. So that's why, you know, that's why I open this up for everyone to really share their thoughts on this. And David, I want to go to you because I want to get your thoughts on all this.
Well, it's great. You know, first show back together, and Giannis and I, we've agreed straight away on the best left back there. And, you know, the only thing for me that Les Strong didn't have was he didn't have the chance to play at the top flight, whereas the other guys did. So that's the only thing you could say is a slight question mark. But, no, I mean, you know, he was consistent, and you know, he was our captain as well. He was a captain in our promotion season when we got back up under Malcolm McDonald. And he had a great career for Fulham, a really great career. And he still is a legend at the club. And it's hard to find anyone. And Giannis is right. I don't think we do have too many standout players. You know, when we talk about strikers, we've had some great strikers. You know, we have people with the class of Dimitar Berbatov. We've had Sahar. You know, we've had Gordon Davis. And, of course, you know, other people through the ages as well. But left back, it is really hard. And the only ones to stand out are the guys, you know, who've played the most in the Premier League for us, because a lot of fans obviously don't remember the Les Strong days. They're not as old as we are, unfortunately. So, I think it's good. It was interesting to hear Bocanegra as well. Actually, I did like Bocanegra. I don't think he's the best left-back we had, but I did like him. I think he was another good servant of the club. He used to perform to the best of his abilities at left-back or at centre-back. But he was more of a defensive player at left-back, really, I think. You do, in the modern game, you want to try and have a left-back who can go forward, really, and push. I noticed no one picked Stafelidis, so I think you know the jury's still very much out on Stafelidis, and I'm not sure whether we even be keeping him at the end of the season, because I'm not convinced that Kit's sold on him really, but that will be something to see in the summer anyway.
No, definitely. Listen, Kostas Stafelidis is a young player, and he's only been playing for him for this season, so got to give him time before he would probably be in contention. But like you said, you know, let's see if he's even going to be a full player next season. He is only on loan. So Kostas Stafelidis, I wasn't expecting to be talking about him, David, during our conversation, but I'm glad that you brought him up. All right, guys, let's move on to a very interesting subject that I really wanted to talk to you guys about. I read this article on Sunday by Max Cohen. Max Cohen is a young writer on collegesconfidential.sbnation.com. Really interesting look at this. We've talked about it, but when you read the article and the points that he made, it was very interesting and really will give us a platform to really discuss the decline of Foam Football Club. So, again, I put this on the College Talk Facebook page. I got a ton of comments on it. I can't read them all. I'm going to read some of them, but I want to start with your thoughts on it, and I'm just going to start here. In the article by Max Cohen that you can actually read on Colleges Confidential, entitled The Decline of Foam Football Club, he makes the claim that the point of the decline can be pinpointed to the summer of 2012, which saw an aging squad on the pitch and a lack of investment by the club under Mohamed Al-Fayed at that time. Giannis, I'm going to start with you. Do you agree with Max's point here?
Absolutely. I one word, absolutely. If you look at, I was watching last night, Swansea City against Liverpool. And,
great match, by the way.
Great match. And I was watching, Swansea was superb in the first half. You look at teams like them and Southampton, what you really have, apart from very good academies, is you've got a young team, but with some experience in there. And they've invested very cleverly in terms of players. So, you know the old speculate to accumulate. Now, if you look at a team like the QP Ha-Ha's, if you look at them right now, they're second from bottom. But the one thing that stands out for me is how there are a lot of teams with a lot of, and no disrespect, but a lot of teams, it's a team that has a lot of Scott Parkers in it. Players have gone have heavy mileage on the clock, and you know they get outpaced, they get outworked. If the field gets heavier, they run into trouble. And I think it's in 2012. I got the feeling that Al-Fayed was looking to move on. The problem is because we had a lack of, because our team got older, and you could say, well, it could be, if you've got an older team, you've got a more experienced team. I think in this era, that doesn't work. I really don't think it does. So we all of a sudden started to look slow. Our back four started to look ponderous. Hell, we had a 40-year-old goalkeeper, even though he was playing well. And then all of a sudden, we're behind the eight ball, and what you saw at the end of the day was a sort of train wreck that was last year. So the aging squad, absolutely. Al-Fayed, absolutely. The only thing that worries me moving forward, Russ, to be honest, is that Khan has not shown me a lot of evidence that he's willing to follow the same path that Al-Fayed did before 2012. Case in point, the recent transfer window. You know,
right.
I mean, he's just picked up
good
Michael
point.
Turner, that's fine, Jazz Richards, and that's it. And now we're 20th. So it worries me moving forward where this club might go. We need to spend money, and we do have money. It's not to say we're short.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you on that, Giannis. It's funny because, again, I've read different reports that the money was available, but, you know, again, I'm paraphrasing a little bit. For some reason, they couldn't find the right fit to bring in, but the money was available. Let's just, you know, hope. You know, and I'm hoping that the money is available this summer, and they do spend, and they spend wisely on the right players to bring into this club. They need to spend. They need to upgrade. It's all about this summer, Giannis. It really is. It's all about this summer.
But the only thing that scares me, and I'm sure David will agree on this one, is what the hell happens if we get relegated? I mean, it's one thing talking about the summer and Khan giving the manager money, and it's not going to be Kit. I'm convinced of it. Because the reason I don't think he gave the money is he doesn't trust Kit. So whoever's going to come in, it might be Alan Kerbishley. I think I've said before, I think that Kit is warming the seat. But if we're in League One, who are we going to get? Most of that squad will be gone. We'll have nothing left, and now we're going to have to completely rebuild just to get back in the championship. That's why these next few games are absolutely critical. If we stay up, then now at least we've got a little bit of a fulcrum, a basis at which to maybe purchase players and relook at the squad. But if we get relegated, we are in as a club, we're in deep doo-doo.
No, there's no question about that. Relegation would be devastating. I'm not going to disagree with you there. But, you know, it's just, you know, I'm hoping for the best. You know, again, table doesn't lie, as David likes to say. I know where we are. We're 6 points, ahead of the bottom, and it's still there. And they need to take care of business sooner than later and take that off the table, because right now, unfortunately, it's still there. And, yes, it would be devastating, Giannis. I completely agree with you about relegation in general. David, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on the article and also what Giannis and I are talking about.
Well, I think I've said a lot of times that the decline started a long time ago. It's because we talked about, you know, last season being, you know, bad, but the foundations for that happened before. And you're right, it was during Fayyad's time. It seemed to be after, you know, the last thing that Fayyad did, the last bit of business really was Brian Ruiz. It didn't really work. It never really came off that well. And coupled with that, and coupled with looking to get out, he shut his wallet, and that was it. His wallet, the door was slammed shut, and there was no more investment. And we had that spell. I mean, and this is, you know, it goes back to really, you know, what Mark Hughes said once again. That's when I see it happening. I think Mark Hughes,
yep.
He was criticised at the time, but he was right that, you know, obviously he had a plan, Mark Hughes, what he wanted to do. And I know, you know, part of his plan meant bringing in 15 ex-Welsh players or something that he used to hang around with Mark Bowen and Glyn Hodges and whoever else he used to have in his entourage. And they were here anyway. But he obviously went and said, right, I need this amount of money because I want to buy these players, or I want, you know, and he was told no. And so he walked. I mean, that's probably, I would imagine, the simplistic view of what happened when he walked and said the club didn't have ambition. I can't see what else it would have been, really. So that's the kind of where the threshold really was. And then so for the whole of Martin Jol's tenure, we really kind of had that scenario, bar obviously the fact that he did spend big for Brian Ruiz. But apart from that, I'm not sure, because although he spent for Ruiz, he recouped the money with people like, you know, Dembele and even Dempsey going. And that was, the decline was certainly back to that point, and if not before that even, really, it started. Because remember, we had this ageing squad. You probably could have eked more time, certainly out of Schwarzer. You could have eked more time out of Danny Murphy, perhaps, another season. Okay, it doesn't sound good when you're, like, relying on people of that age, because, you know, the problem was we had the ageing squad, but there were some players that probably could have been retained that weren't, and other players that perhaps needed to be replaced. There needed to be something there, but it just wasn't there. So, yeah, and Giannis is absolutely right, and I know we don't want to talk about it, or you don't want to talk about it, but relegation would be the train wreck of all train wrecks, Giannis, wouldn't
sure.
it?
It'd be an absolute disaster. Because, you know what, the expansion plans for 30,000 to have 30,000 in the stadium would be a laugher. We're having problems filling 20,000. Geez, it's so bad that Brentford are bringing close to 7,000 to the Cottage for the game. We've actually given them the tickets, which is a diamond in itself. So if we get relegated to League One and we've got to play teams like Crewe Alexandra, in all due respect to them, it's not going to look good.
No, Giannis, listen, I totally agree with you. And David, going back to you, again, you know, he didn't share this in the comments of this article, but I did see the comments from my original co-host, Kyle Bond. He actually agrees with you. He goes back to what Mark Hughes said. You know, again, we can think of what we want about Mark Hughes, but what he said back then, you know, it hurt to hear it, you know, but, you know, listen, Mark Hughes is doing a decent job at Stoke City. It that might have been the real warning signal, was back all the way back then. You bring up Brian Ruiz. I was thinking of that as well. That was the last major investment he made, was Brian Ruiz. That's when Yol came in. And then after that, really, there wasn't this huge investment after that. It was Brian Ruiz. You know, again, nothing against Brian Ruiz. It didn't work out the way that probably we all thought it was going to work out. He is, you know, he is a high-quality player. It just hasn't worked out, you know, to mesh with Fulham Football Club. For whatever reason, you know, again, we could talk about the style of English football. But, again, it just hasn't worked out to the level that the investment was on him. You know, again, we invested a lot of money in him, and I don't think I'm going to be the only one to state the obvious. It definitely didn't pay off. And goodbye you for mentioning that. You know, again, I know how you feel about Brian Ruiz, but I agree with you on this point. You know, we could talk about the decline being in 2012, but you can actually even go back a little bit further and say, you know, again, it really started, you know, again, it could have really started back when Mark Hughes left, and then you bring in Brian Ruiz, and it just didn't work. And then the lack of investment after that. You know, again, the investment after that just was not at that level, and maybe it should have been. All right, I'm going to read some of the comments here. I'm going to read by, let's start here with Chris Lewis. This is on the Cars Talk Facebook page. That was definitely when it started to really look troubling that season. All the signs of a declining team were there. The clincher was the failure to sack Yoel after the atrocious run at the end of the season and hire a fresh face. And the investment in the squad significantly. I can keep going on, but that's basically gives you the flavor of what Chris said. Steve Leahy said, yep, Mo cannot escape this situation untarnished. He should have backed Roy after the Europa final, should have sacked Yoel sooner, should have sold up to Khan. Let's see. Richard McCarthy wrote, Mo trimmed the club to the bone, so it was sellable as he didn't want to invest long-term and got too many players on a one-year contract or loan players who only had themselves in mind. Very interesting take. Jill Fuller, yes, agree wholeheartedly. Mo knew he was selling the club and wanted a return on his investment. Let me just say, Mo knew. Talking about Mohamed Al-Fayed. Chris Hall wrote, and we all condemn Mark Hughes for saying we had no ambition. I make him right now. The only laughing is Mohamed Al-Fayed all the way to the bank. I'm in Mohamed Rowe. Fully agreed. We should negotiate better for Dembele, at least ask for players in exchange, given the time left to find replacements. The following summer window, we made all the wrong signings. No point in signing Boateng and Parker, who are both DMs, and only use one. He keeps going on and on because, again, people were very passionate about this article, which is very interesting. James Fulham wrote, we've been circling the drain since then for use, and we all saw it happening before our eyes. Very good point. Nick McHugh totally disagreed with the article, and Dembele had a buyout clause that Spurs triggered. So Nick actually disagrees. Our friend Anthea Evans in New Zealand disagree. The decline did not come from one season or lack of investment. However, the change of ownership is the reason, in my opinion, going from a chairman like Al-Fayed, who had a strong control and influence over the club, to an inexperienced and absent owner, has left the club looking rudderless. Khan is still learning, like Kit, the young players in the squad. It takes time. Okay, so that's Anthea's view. Giannis, I'm going to go to you. What are your thoughts of what some of the Fulham supporters had to say about the decline? And I want to ask you again because it's a very bone of contention with me. With the Dembele situation, he did have a clause in his contract that allowed him to get out, to opt out, which he did, and then he went to Spurs when they were able to meet the money requirements. But yeah. My whole thing with that is, where were the replacements for Moussa Dembele and Clint Dempsey? Dimitar Berbatov was not the replacement for either one of those players. But I want to get your thoughts on all of this.
And you just hit the nail on the head. I mean, you know, you've got all this money in, did you reinvest it? And actually, maybe you can help me with this one, Russ. The notion of the absentee owner is absolutely right. Now, but you'll be able to know this. Who was the player that Jacksonville just signed for 5 years for $40 million?
Julius Thomas.
Yeah. Right, of course. Right. 5 years, $40 million.
Yes.
Demaryius Thomas, right, from Denver, right?
Julius Thomas, the tight end, not the wide receiver.
Yeah, right. So that, 5 years, $40 million. That's a lot of money on one free agent. Meanwhile, in the transfer deadline, we spent nothing, and it's just making me. I'm so suspicious. I mean, the Jaguars are going to be playing the Buffalo Bills next year in the NFL. So Khan's going to be back in London. He's loving that. And it just for some reason, it gives me the horrible suspicion that one of the reasons he bought the club was to get a foothold into that London scene, to push to maybe get a franchise to go over to London that he's going to, that he might buy, or I don't know what it is. But it's daft. It's absolutely daft. And you know what? Right now, if you look at the squad, we've got so much inexperience and so many holes to fill that it's made fans angry. And you know, a lot of people have blamed Yol. I'm not going to be so quick to do that because he could only do with what he had. Mark Hughes had an excellent season with us, but he got off because he realized, and we all trashed him, myself included. But look at the number of players and the quality of players we've lost in the last 2-3 years. It's scary. It really is scary. And you know what? You can only survive so many losses.
No, listen, I totally agree with you, Giannis. And, you know, and it's interesting because when we're going through this and thinking about the decline and thinking about Mark Hughes, and I trashed him too, Giannis. I'll be the first to admit, I trashed him too. I could not believe those comments. It really angered me. But looking back at it now and seeing what has happened since then, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's tough. And he had a very good season. That gets overlooked. He had a good season. He turned it around. He turned it around once Bobby Zamora got healthy from the injury. He turned that season around, and we had a good ending to the season. And then he's off. Then he's gone because, quote unquote, lack of ambition by Fulham Football Club. And now here we are, where we are. Maybe again, that was the first warning signal, was Mark Hughes leaving. Maybe that's, you know, again, the decline possibly happened a year later, but maybe the first warning signal was all the way back with Mark Hughes. I find this whole topic interesting. David, what are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, as I said, it's, you know, Mark Hughes, it's a very key things that he said, isn't it? Very, very key that, you know, what is it he's been asking for? Why is it he said we've got no ambition? I mean, I'm sure he hasn't said to the chairman, actually, you know, we need a 60,000 seat stadium. We've got to move now. And the chairman said, no, it's not going to be that. It's got to be player related investments in the squad. It has to be. So he had the perfect, you know, idea, and people didn't want to hear it, of course, because, you know, Al Fayed, he could do no wrong really for most people, and still, you know, a lot of people won't hear a word said against him. But you can't blame him as a, you know, an aging man, an elderly man, you know, perhaps wanting to get out of these things, wanting to cash in on his investment. And he didn't make money out of it. I don't think he made money out of it. He maybe got his money back at best, but I don't think he made money out of it. But it's clear when you look at it, the difference between the way, you know, and I think it was Anthea put it, that, you know, a fairly hands-on owner who had experience, perhaps, compared to how Khan has been, and it has been a mess since. And Martin Yol, he didn't do a good job for us. Perhaps he didn't have both hands, you know, to use. Maybe one hand was partly tied behind his back, but he didn't do a good job. He relied too much on the same old, you know. He obviously favoured Berbatov, he favoured Ruiz, and there was times it just didn't work. He was very set in his ways as well a bit, and he'd spend his whole time blaming, you know, the sale of Dembele and Dempsey and everything, and perhaps he was right on that one. But it's clear to me that, you know, the club were clear. You know, you can't blame Dembele. If there was a clause of $15 million to get him out and it was met, then he has to go. And that's a great price, and probably now it is a great price, because when you look at how little he's played relatively for Spurs, we've done very well to get $15 million for a player who hasn't been a regular. But
yes,
it was clear that it was cashing in. They thought, here's our chance to get some money back for what we've paid for Ruiz or whatever. And because the obvious thing at the time was, who are we going to buy? Who are we going to buy? We've got all this money. But it just never happened. And so
no, it never happened,
you know,
David. That's the part of this that upsets me.
Yeah.
Is that that
so
money?
After what Mark Hughes has said.
Yeah.
So after what Mark Hughes has said, and then coupled with the evidence that a player that Mark Hughes bought, of course, and we made a quick profit on relatively, but we haven't reinvested that into the squad. You know, that's number two in the kind of nail in the coffin of to where we are now. So, the writing was on the wall, really, I think. In a lot of ways, it's perhaps we didn't want to see the signs. And as I say, Mark Hughes, you could dismiss him offhand as being, you know, a strange guy who's walked away. But when you put all the pieces of jigsaw together, I think it starts to build a bit of a picture. And you can see that, you know, this situation, you know, it started back then. And it's just, it's been a combination of things, you know, the lack of investment, the aging of the squad, failure to replace key players, perhaps Martignol not being as good as people think, maybe he was retained too long, then we've had the change of ownership, a very, very naive new owner, you know, supposedly very poor kind of business decisions made, and again, the change of managers and the disruption, and it's just all been, you know, it has been a catalogue of disasters, really, starting back, but, you know, to Mark Hughes and that one, really, for me.
Now, listen, you know, very good point about bringing all this stuff going all the way back to Mark Hughes. That's why I'm glad we could talk about it. And, Giannis, I'm going to go to you, and I'm going to make a promise to you.
Yep.
You know, and I'm going to, again, call me naive. I'm going to go with the idea, you know, that we will survive. We will get through this season because, again, I truly believe we will, but I understand the threat. So let's just go with the idea that we get through. You just brought up a valid point. And listen, I met Mr. Khan. He seemed like a genuine guy, okay? I'm just going to start there. This summer for me, if we survive and we get to the summer, he better invest. And he better invest wisely on and bring in players, impact players, because you just brought up a good point. He's doing that with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He needs to do the same with Fulham Football Club and take us to that next level. We need key players in the transfer market over the summer, and that means spending some money. If you weren't going to spend it in January, for whatever reason, okay. It better happen this summer, Giannis. It really, you know, and I'm making a promise to you. If he does not, we get to the summer, I will call him out because it needs to happen this summer.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. And you know, the one step further is, if you bought the club as a cheap toy, with our 135 years of history, do us a favor, find someone else who'll come in and reinvest in the club. I mean, to be fair to Mohamed Al-Fayed, I'm sure he wouldn't have given the, you know, sold the club off to some Tom, Dick, and Harry, because of course he had a love affair with the club. We all know that, but we've seen precious little from Mr. Khan so far. And if he feels, I mean, if he's over his head, I get him. Listen, there are many potential owners out, the oil magnates in Russia, the Far East, who'd kill to have the chance to take over, whether it's a Premier League or Championship club. Give them the club, sell them the club so they can reinvest. Look at what happened to Man City, as an example. Look at what's happened to Chelsea, as an example. And it just needs a little bit of luck like that, and get the right owner in that's going to help us move forward. He's going to have to reinvest heavily. I mean, the first thing, I think, his first decision he has to make, if he hasn't made it already, the first decision he has to make is that if we stay up, does Kit stay? And to me, it's an absolute no. Absolutely not. There's some managers are going to lose their jobs, as we know, at the end of the season. And hopefully, we will look at some of these, although I would not have a problem with Alan Kerbishley taking over. He's got the experience, he's got the street cred, he's got the respect, he'll know the transfer market, and I think he'd be the perfect guy to take over. I just think I'd like to see Kit as an assistant to Kerbs so that he could really learn the game.
You just want to see the role reversal.
Yes, I would. Yeah, I would. I think that Kit, when Cookie took over, I think it was 2003, he was 32, and he was, the youngest ever Premier League manager, and he rescued us. He got us out, and da-da-da, and he had a very good season next. But I think there was an element of luck in that. But he did well. But with Kit, he's coming to a completely different situation, and I think he needs to learn a little bit more on the job, like Steve Keen did actually under Cookie Coleman. And Steve Keen, by the way, I thought was a good manager, except that, you know, the chicken merchants up in Blackburn or India or wherever they came from wouldn't give him money, and unfortunately Blackburn are where they are now. But I'd like to see the roles reversed, certainly.
Okay. And Giannis, I know this is going to sound strange, but you know, I've always said that we need to get to the summer and then assess the situation with Kip. But here's the thing, and maybe I'm wrong to feel this way. Kerberschley, you know, David and I have talked about that the potential of what you're talking about, Kerberschley taking over, could be real, you know. And the fact that he's now involved with the team, I think, is a major positive. I think it's actually being downplayed a little bit. The fact that he's there, you know, again, I don't know how much influence he's going to have these last nine matches, but I'm just glad that he's back involved with the team. What are your thoughts with the fact that he's just come back?
I'm delighted. I mean, he did a fantastic job at Charlton. And as I said, he's one of the more respected figures in the game. Last year, I mean, I keep going back to what happened last year. You had Mühlenstein in, and then you had Mühlenstein in, and then they brought Ray Wilkins in, and then they brought Kerberschley in, and then they were fired. I mean, if you look back to last year and some of the nonsense that happened, like, it really is laughable. It's like the script from The Young and the Restless. So, I mean, it's less funny than True Life. So Kerberschley was badly treated, but obviously it wasn't that badly treated that he's actually decided to come back. I think for the last few years, he's wanted to get back into football management, but the situation hasn't been right. He's turned down a few jobs. This, I think, would be perfect because he could take young players. He is a very good technical coach. You could take some of these young players, make some good decisions at the end of the year, and work with Khan when getting the right players to get us back to the Premier League. He has the experience that Kit does not. And I think that's important because with Kit, even in that press conference, you know, the interview with Sarah, you can tell he's beginning to look a little bit battle-worn. He's hearing the criticism from the fans. The natives are getting restless. And we're 20th. So he knows now, you know, the honeymoon is over, the first marital row has taken place, things have been thrown around the room, and now he's got to deal with the mess. And we're in a precarious position like right now. And I'm glad we're going to get onto that because there was a couple of things in that interview that really bothered me.
We're going to get right into that right now, actually in a second. But David has something that he wants to talk about Alan Kerberschley. I just saw a message from you, David. Do you have something you want to share about Kerberschley?
Well, Giannis mentioned the young and the restless, I think, didn't you, like last year or something? It was more like the old and the useless, actually, I think, than the young and the restless, probably, wasn't it? But I spoke to my friend today who, this is a bit of a, my auntie's knows someone who lives next door to someone's dog that with this, but, you know, my friend whose cousin used to play for West Ham and Charlton and knows Kerberschley, apparently. And Kerberschley, you know, he's under the impression that Kerberschley's taken over in the summer. That's what this is all about. Whether this is complete rubbish, speculation, pie in the sky, I don't know. But you could see it happening, couldn't you?
Yeah, no, David, I could totally see it happening. And Giannis has already mentioned it. It's kind of, you know, again, that's why it's like, you know, would it be harsh on Kit? Well, again, we have to see how he finishes off the season. But the fact that he's now here, David, I think is a good thing one way or another. It gives Khan options this summer. If he doesn't think that Kit's the right man, you have Kerberschley right there. And, you know, again, you're hearing third, fourth person. So you know, again, we got to take that for what it's worth. But I just like the fact that the option is there. If a move has to be made, if Khan wants to make the move, Giannis wants to make the move, and I understand where he's coming from, Kerberschley is already involved. So he's right there. I mean, you have a manager, I hate to say a manager in waiting. He's right there. So I just like the fact that Kerberschley is there. Let's get to the summer, and then let's see what Khan ends up doing. But the fact that Kerberschley is involved with Fulham Football Club, I think, is a huge positive. And I don't think enough has really been talked about it because, you both are saying you could see that happening. I could see it happening as well. I could potentially see Kubiczek taking over this summer. Will it happen? I don't know. But the potential is there because he's back involved again. All right. All right, guys, let's move on. And Giannis definitely wants to share his thoughts about this audio clip of Kit's interview that he did with Sarah today. I'm going to play it now, and then we can get right to it and talk about it. And, David, have you had a chance to see this yet?
No, I haven't, so I'll be interested to hear what he has to say.
I think you're going to be interested. Trust me, especially when he talks about Brian Ruiz, I think you're going to be interested. Okay, without further ado, this is an interview done earlier with the full manager, Kit Simons, by Sarah Brooks, and here is Kit.
Kit, obviously after the Bournemouth result, it was really important to go away to Sheffield and get a positive result, which was less than easy on that pitch, it has to be said.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly conducive for silky soccer, but you know, same for both teams, and it was, rather than an excuse, it was a factor for the way we played the game, and you know, we dealt with it accordingly.
Going behind again, obviously frustrating for you to be watching from the touchlines, but the resilience shown in coming back from that one goal deficit was obviously really pleasing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, as you said, disappointed with the goal. We dealt with the initial corner very well, and then sort of poor with the second phase, which proved costly. But then we showed good resilience, good character to get ourselves back into it. And once we got the equaliser, you know, we had the better chances to go and win the game. Couldn't quite take the opportunity.
Yeah,
but
there were a couple of great opportunities at the end that could a better decision made.
Well, it was, and you know, again, we've looked at it, we reviewed it in the video, and some of it was down to the pitch, but we got a few instances where we had a man over, sort of in and around their penalty box, and we could just get it to that spare man. It could have been a different outcome, but couldn't quite find him. But it was good situations and opportunities for us, but that's it. We couldn't quite take them on the day, but you know, if we keep making those opportunities and chances, then the goals will come.
What was the most important thing? Was it making sure that defeat against Bournemouth had gone, or was it grinding out a result? Because that's really what happened.
Well, it was a bit of both. You know, we had to, the Bournemouth game had gone. It was very, very disappointing and you know, not good enough from our point of view. But you know, you've got to then move on, and you've got to show that you've moved on, and we did that. You know, we changed the formation, changed personnel, and we looked, you know, we looked solid and functional. You know, maybe lacked a little bit of flair, but it wasn't a pitch for flair. So we did what we had to do. You know, and points in the Championship are very precious, and so we got a good away one.
So how does that change your thinking for tomorrow evening's game against Leeds? Obviously, Matt Smith started. That's two goals in two games now. That must give you a reason to put him on the start sheet.
Well, Matt's done very well. Had a slight calf problem as well. He felt his calf in the warm-up at Sheffield and then was able to play the whole game, and obviously scored a good goal for us. So we're conscious of that, but confident also that he'll be available for tomorrow. And he's done great since he's come back in. He's given us a different way of playing, a different dynamic, which I think in the Championship sometimes you need. You know, I was at the Reading game last night and saw Steve Cottrell, who was absolutely buzzing for Matt to have come back and done so well. So it's important he went out and got Matt's fitness, got his confidence up, scored some goals. He's back to us in a good vein of form.
And Michael Turner, one training session with the first team, goes in, looks like he's been in that position for months.
He does, yeah. I mean, he's you know, a very experienced player, gave us that, I think, confidence at the back and looked very assured. You know, he's a good lad, good player, comes straight in and just wants to get on with his job. He certainly seems to be enjoying himself here at Fulham and played very well for us in what was a tough debut up there on that pitch against a physical presence in Nui, and he dealt with him very well. So, no, I was very pleased with his performance.
Brian Ruiz was missing both from the starting lineup and from the bench on Saturday. Was that a tactical decision, or was Brian carrying an injury?
No, well, he'd been away in the week for some treatment on the back, which he has sort of on a regular basis. I made the decision I wasn't going to start him. I spoke to Brian about that, and you know, we came to the decision between us that then a, you know, a 5-6 hour coach journey back from Sheffield after the game wouldn't then put him in the best place with a view to Wednesday night's game. I mean, we felt that, you know, Hillsborough with the condition of the pitch wasn't going to be the game for Brian, you know, whereby Leeds at Craven Cottage is a different prospect altogether and will be viewed accordingly.
And what are you expecting from Leeds?
Well, a very good side, you know, they've got real excellent, bright young players, loads of energy, good pace and, you know, in a good vein of form themselves. So, yeah, it'll be a very tough game. They've got a good away record too. So, yeah, we know we're going to be up against it and have to be at our best to get the result.
And tactically, there will be some changes, presumably, from last week's game, because it's Craven Cottage, because it's home, because the pitch better.
Well, that's right, exactly. Like, you know, I think it's very much a case of you need to look at every game on its merits, if you like, or take it for what it is and try and put out a team in a formation that I think can get the result, you know, linked into the condition of the pitch and things like that. You've got to take all these factors, like I say, into account before I pick the team and choose the tactics and the formation.
Obviously, there are a couple of injury concerns with Las Vegans. Christensen still out, and I think a couple more. Can you give us an update?
Yeah, so last we've had quite good news, and actually this week he's been over to Germany for some injections, but hopefully not as bad as we initially thought. So he's still, you know, still a bit of time away at the moment, but he's progressing okay. Taggart with his hamstring and Moussa Dembélé both got slight hamstrings, but they'll probably both be about a week, 10 days away, and then hopefully they'll both be back in contention. Emerson Hyman is now back in full training, which is great. Could be looking at getting some game time very soon, so overall, not too bad at all.
We wish you luck tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Cheers.
Okay, we are back, and that was an interview done earlier today with the Fulham manager, Kit Simons, by Sarah Brooks. You can actually watch it on FulhamFC.com. And as always, thank you so much, Sam Green, for sending this to us so we could talk about it on the show. And, Giannis, I'll go to you first. You know, you had some thoughts before we even started the show on this this interview. What would you like to share with us what we actually just listened to?
Well, okay. Mention these names here. David will know them, obviously. Eddie Lowe, Jimmy Hill, Bobby Robson, Johnny Haynes, Bedford Jezzard, Alan Clark. Former players of Fulham. What the hell would they have made of a manager using a field as an excuse? I mean, anybody that watched football in the 70s and 80s will know that we often played on mud baths. So to use the field of an excuse, as an excuse, is pathetic, number one. And certainly for the way you play. Number two, it seems pretty clear to me he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He doesn't know what formation he's doing. Sarah's asking him pointed questions, and he can't even give a straight answer. And then number three, the Brian Ruiz situation. Here's a thought. He had a conversation with Ruiz about the five-hour coach ride coming back from Hillsborough. Don't these coaches have heated seats? I mean, really, what are you? Can you think of a worse excuse for not selecting a player because of a coach ride coming home? Is he on crack? I mean, you know, George Best is probably the most talented footballer I've ever seen. And, you know, I mean, bless his heart, he wasted it on booze and women and all that sort of stuff. He played in the worst fields in the world. Did it stop him? So why would it stop someone like Ruiz with all his skill? It was a lame interview. By the end, I felt like just sticking my fist through it, because he's not getting it. He doesn't get it. He still doesn't know what formation he wants to use. He still doesn't know who his strongest lineup is. I've got no idea. People criticised Felix for the bingo. Felix bingo. I think this is actually worse, because he's like forget the deer in the headlights. He reminds me of a character from Polka Dot Shorts. Bear. He just dances around with a big head and he puts his hands in his pockets. I don't know what he's doing. I don't think anyone knows what he's doing. No, honestly, put Sarah in charge. The reason she's asking these questions, she's asking the questions because she knows the answers. But he doesn't know the answers, but she knows them. So I say put Sarah in charge. Honestly, what a joke.
Well, again, going back to the whole coach thing, because that stood out to me, Giannis, I'm a fan of the Boston Celtics and a player that had back injuries, and he's talking about a back issue with Brian Ruiz was Larry Bird. Bird used to lie down in back of airplanes just so he could play and then play the next night. That's what he would have to do. he would actually do it in back of the bench as well, in between plays, in between the game still going on, because he was a competitor. I'm not saying that Brian Ruiz is not a competitor. I'm just saying, why was that a consideration for this game? If you needed him, if you wanted to play him, it shouldn't be about the coach ride. It shouldn't be about that. You know, honestly, it shouldn't be about that. But right. I found it interesting that stood out for me too, Giannis. And that's interesting because I'm assuming Brian Ruiz probably wanted to play Giannis. I mean, that's the feeling I got from it.
Of course he does. I mean, that's the lamest excuse since you had the creation of the one-legged donkey. Well, I mean, at least say, if he's got an injury, fine. We decided we're going to rest him because, you know what, we think that Leeds is going to be a physical game. They're in form at the moment. And please don't give me the excuse about the field. I mean, I saw that field. When I was playing, that field up at Hillsborough on Saturday was tantamount to Wembley for me. Seriously. These are professionals. I mean, don't moan about bumps and bonks and boobs and bones and all that sort of stuff. Rubbish. And he would have wanted to play because good players want to play. They don't want to miss games or park their asses on a bench. So to me, that was lame. So to say he's in my doghouse right now, Mr. Kitt, is the understatement of the millennium.
Okay, good stuff there, Giannis. David, what are your thoughts about the interview with Kitt?
Do you know what? I hate coach journeys, I really do. And what I said at the top of the show about it being an honour to play for your country, no matter what. If someone said to me, do you want to play for England, but there's a five-hour coach journey, I would actually seriously think about it. I wouldn't just say yes, because for some people it's terrible. But in all seriousness, although I hear what Giannis is saying, I'd like to sort of counter that argument and say, no, I'm actually going to give Kitt a bit of credit for actually making the decision and saying, right, this isn't the pitch for Brian Ruiz. Whether he's right or wrong, but this isn't the pitch for Brian Ruiz. I'm leaving him out. We've got another match on Wednesday, an important match on Wednesday. I want him to be fresh for that match. I don't want him to get a knock or anything. And, you know, and maybe even Brian Ruiz, I don't know. Brian Ruiz probably prides himself on his control and whatever else, his skill. And it's a very hard pitch to do that. So, I don't know. Maybe there was a bit of input from Brian Ruiz there as well. So, you know, I said on Sunday, I think, I said if they left Brian Ruiz out for tactical reasons, I actually give them credit because they've actually tried to make a bold decision. You might say it's wrong, but they've made a bold decision to say, right, this isn't the pitch. And it was a horrendous pitch by modern standards. Yes, I know we've all played football on pitches like that in the past, and I take Giannis's point. I've played on worse myself, but I don't think it was a pitch for Brian Ruiz. It wasn't a pitch for Patrick Roberts. They didn't bring him on either, which I'm surprised he was on the bench, to be honest with you. And why not, you know, use your squad a little bit to try different things? Because at the end of the day, the diamond has been, you know, fundamentally the issue we've had with being narrow, getting beaten down the wings. You know, I guess you didn't see the match last night. Of course, it was very, very poignant. You probably watched the Liverpool Swansea match if you had anything, but we all watched.
I did.
Well, I did watch that match. We had Reading and Bradford on. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I saw the Liverpool match.
Yeah, and on the Reading match at half time, Dean Saunders was doing some punditry or something, and he pointed out about how they were playing the diamond system and how they were narrow and how they were getting beaten down the wings all the time and getting, you know, subject to crosses or whatever. It was exactly kind of what we've been saying about Fulham. Exactly. And there's been this, you know, nearly all the other teams in the Championship tend to play with some sort of width. 4-4-1-1, 4-4-2, 4-5-1. Derby are kind of a 4-5-1, which becomes a 4-3-3.
Right.
There's not really many people who seem to play with the diamond system. And other teams have been working it out. And this was, you know, the closest we've got in a long time to a fairly kind of, it was a cautious, but it was a solid enough sort of lineup with, you know, two banks of four, two forwards, McCormack dropping off a bit, and the problem has always been, how would you fit Brian Ruiz in that team? You can't play him as one of the central midfielders because you need that stronger player in there, more defensive player in there, and so you go back to then the Martignol situation. Do you play him as a, you know, on the right of midfield, which kind of defeats what you're trying to do, or you drop a striker. So I don't criticise Kitt for that. it's obviously going to be interesting to see what he does for tomorrow night. And
right.
I would imagine, reading between the lines, that we switched to a diamond second half at Rotherham. And because he sounds like he's intended to bring Brian Ruiz back, we will be back to the diamond again tomorrow night. But whether that, you know, whether that's going to cure our problems, whether it's going to be successful, I don't know. More often than not, it isn't. But, you know, perhaps, I know, perhaps with Kerbish's input, there can be some subtle changes which will make things better. But I think it's very interesting what Kit had to say, really.
Okay.
You just can't get away from the man, though, can you, Brian Ruiz, even when he's not playing. You know? I think Emilio tweeted something about at least Cottage Talk won't be about Brian Ruiz on Sunday because he wasn't playing.
Yeah, but it still was, David.
Yeah.
It still was.
I did it deliberately to make sure, though. I made sure just to give.
okay, but listen,
I want
to move on from this, but again, I just want to go back to Giannis, David.
I give Kit credit for making a decision at the end of the day.
Okay.
At the end of the day, we question whether he knows what he's doing, but at least he's tried to make a decision. Yeah.
Okay. I hear what you're saying, but you know, again, going back to Giannis, because I just want to make sure we're discussing this correctly, because you say you disagree with him. Giannis, was your issue more with the excuse than anything else? Because that's what I thought I heard from you. Again, the reasoning by Kit, not the decision, but the way he said it to Sarah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And I, you know, these professionals get paid, you know, really, really good money. And I think the day when you've got a head coach turn around and say, well, this pitch isn't for this player. Really? That's such a poor excuse. You play, good footballers play on all pitches. And I don't care what, if it's heavy, if it's light, if it's slick, whatever. So what's going to happen next? Well, we won't play Stefanidis because it's raining. He doesn't play well in the rain. Or we won't play Smith because we're going up to Rotherham and it's got a slight hill and he's not good at running down hills. And the excuses pile up. So for me, you know, good footballers can play on any pitch, and to say that it's not his pitch, I don't care if they're playing on dog poo. Get him out there, get him playing. Forget the bloody pitch. Play. It's not his
okay.
pitch. What, was he a diva? I mean, I keep going back in history and going back to the, you know, this 50s, 60s, 70s. Can you imagine any players of that era ever complaining about, oh, well, I can't play in that because it's too heavy and it's muddy. Really? Oh, well, anyway.
Okay. All right, guys. Let's move on. Let's start to preview the match. Boy, the interview got us going in a different direction, but it's good. It was good. It was good discussion piece, but let's move on. Let's now preview this match against Leeds United. I'm just going to tell you guys a little bit about them. What's interesting about them since the last time Fulham played them, you know, again, when Fulham got the victory, they've actually been on pretty much of an upswing. They have won 7 out of their last 11, which is pretty good. They're currently 13th. They've won 13. They have 9 draws. They've lost 15. They've only scored 39. They've given up 46 for a -7 goal differential, but they are on 48 points. Fulham, unfortunately, are 20th with 11 victories, 7 draws, 19 losses, 48 goals scored, but have given up 65 for -17, and we are on 40 points. Players to watch for Leeds United would include their midfield. Their midfield, again, is their strength, according to everything that I've read and what I watched. Midfielders Lewis Cook, Luke Murphy, and Alex Mollat are really the players to watch. Mollat has actually scored 8 goals, but 4 in his last, in the last month, he has scored 4 goals. So he's actually been looking really good, and you really need to also look at Billy Sharp up front, along with Steve Morrison. This is a decent side that actually is playing much better than when Fulham played them last time. And again, last time we played them, they're playing a different formation. They are currently now playing a 4-2-3-1. Okay, and also I read an article in Cottage's Confidential .sbnation.com with a Leeds fan, and the Leeds fan said that their weakness, believe it or not, is you know, again, on the wings. That's their weakness. So keep that in mind when we go through this preview of the match. And I also want to read this from the from Neil Redfern, the manager for Leeds United. This is actually in the Yorkshire Evening Post, and the article was entitled, "We have probably the best midfield in the division." And, you know, and again, here's a quote from Redfern, I'm sorry. "Probably have the best midfield in the division centrally, and teams are going to try to stop it." Quote, this is also a quote from, "We have talked about rotating around to get the spare man on the ball through the last week, and I felt we did it quite well on Saturday, to be fair." So, again, their strength is youth in central midfield, and they do have it, and they have some good young players. So again, this is a little different of a team than Fulham played, you know, several months ago. Again, change of formation, and you know, and again, they've really shown some growth since then. Like I said, they've won 7 out of the last 11, which is quite impressive. And Giannis, I'll start with you. You know, again, when Fulham played them last time, they were not doing that great. They were actually on a little bit of a downside. Now they've gone up. What are your thoughts about Leeds United going into this match?
Well, they're obviously a different proposition from early in the season. Neil Redfern's done a good job there, and they've had some recent, some pretty good results, although his notion that they're the best midfield in the division is like saying that we're going to re-sign Senderos and he's going to score 30 goals for us next year. I mean, I think he's way out to lunch. I mean, if you're looking at the midfield, I mean, I think Bournemouth have the best midfield in the division. I think Derby are very close behind. I really like Nottingham Forest's one as well. Watford one is very useful, and God knows we saw enough of them this year. So I disagree with that, but they are a youthful midfield, and they are a different team. And I think because of where they are in the division, they know they're safe, so they can play a little bit loose. I think this is going to be a very dangerous game for us. But I think that a lot of the lineup or selection for tomorrow may depend on tonight's result up at the JJB, because we're going to play in Watford. That's a big game for Watford, but it's obviously a big game for Wigan. Now, if Wigan get 3 points, we're in real trouble, because then they're 3 points behind us and Rotherham, and Rotherham and us have the same goal difference. Now, Rotherham are away to Forest tomorrow, and that'll be a tough game. So we've got a chance maybe to open a little bit of a gap. But if Wigan win, it may change the thinking, because a point tomorrow night will not really do us any good, especially when we've got to, I think, go up to Huddersfield on Saturday, and that will be a tricky game as well up in Yorkshire. So I think he'll look at tonight's game and then take it from there. But I'm expecting a tough battle tomorrow night. I think it's going to be a difficult game, and we'll do well to beat them. I'm expecting a good crowd. Leeds always bring a big fan base down, but I'm expecting a tough game for us.
Very good take there, Giannis. And again, based on what I'm reading, they are bringing down a decent amount of people there for this match. So expect there to be a good amount of Leeds United fans there. David, yep. What are your thoughts about Leeds since the last time we played them?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm looking forward to that bit about the fans, because I have to get the Leeds to London train both ways. So we'll be among them. The last train home, or the only train we get home, is the Leeds train. So that will be packed tomorrow night with Leeds fans. So let's hope they're friendly. But I think the thing that I actually take from this is, in a positive way, is that we've had a spell where we've played a lot of teams who've been doing badly, and you know, for some reason they suddenly get a good result against us. So in that respect, can turn it around its head and say, well, they've been playing well, so they expect to do well. So it's not like they're looking for their first win for ages, because we seem to hand it on a plate. So if anything, we may catch them a bit more confident. Like, you know, look at Derby and their wobble they've had, losing to us, losing to Brighton and everything else, and, you know, giving up 2 late goals at Birmingham. Perhaps overconfidence can be a dangerous thing as well. So, you know, they may come down confident and go home with their tails between their legs. You know, the midfield is going to be an important battle, obviously, and that's why, you know, I feel partly as well that Kit will be looking to revert back to his diamond formation, or whether to get the three central midfielders to win that battle in there. So it will be a tight game, no doubt. I can't see it being a walk for us. I mean, no games really are hardly at the moment, but I can't see why, on the other hand, if we can't be disciplined and things, and we can't get a result either.
I agree with that, David. Again, this is a winnable match. You know, listen, we've already beat them once, but that's beside the point. This is a different team we're playing, and Fulham are different too. But this is a winnable match. Let's let's start there. They are definitely a different side. They are playing with confidence. And like Giannis said, you know, the pressure's off on them and all the pressure's on Fulham. So again, it's an interesting situation, but it is a match that they should that they can and should win. I should put should win. They should win this. This is a team that they should beat at home. I'm sorry, it is. I'm going in with that idea. They should win this match. But there are things going around it, and I'm glad that Giannis brought up the whole situation with Wigan because that could affect how things happen tomorrow night. All right, David, over to you. Let's talk about the ref. Give me just a couple minutes because we only have 15 minutes left in the show.
Well, I'm not going to give you very much at all because I don't know very much, but it's Chris Kavanagh. I'm not sure if he's related to Sean, probably not, but he's a very, very young ref. I think he's only about 28. He's only just been, you know, in the league for a year or two now. So, obviously promising young ref coming up from Manchester. Couldn't find anything else on him. I'd not heard of him before, I have to admit. So, you know, 28-year-old ref, let's see how he does.
Okay, well, that's good news. Sometimes no news is good news, so hopefully that's a good thing. All right, let's move on, and over to you, Giannis. What do Fulham need to do to win this match? How does Kit set them up to win, not draw, to win?
Well, looking back to the lineup up at Hillsborough on Saturday, I think he's got to keep a similar lineup, except maybe bring Ruiz in for Kavanagh, and then go have what you've got there, the 4-4-2. I'm not sure he's going to revert to the diamond, keeping McCormack and Smith up front, put Hoogland out wide on the right, Tunnicliffe and Park in the middle, and Stefanidis, Turner, Hutchinson and Richards at the back. Although, I think this is the sort of game I'd like to see Grimmer back in. You know, Russ, that I've got a little bit of a discomfort level when, you know, you have games where three of your back four are loanees. That really sucks. It's not something I like. But, I mean, if he can bring Ruiz in, it'll at least give us a little bit of width. And I think a lot of it's got to be down to Kit and how he gets them ready for this game. He talked about the resilience of Saturday, and I get that. But resilience is only going to count for so many points. It's like saying the Tennessee Titans were resilient last year, even though they won two games out of 16. So you've got to find a way to G them up for what is a very, very big game. And 3 points will make a massive difference, especially if Wigan lose. And I think they will lose to Watford tonight. I really do. So the chance is there, the window's there to get the 3 points, and hopefully we don't screw it up.
It's a good point there, Giannis, because, again, if things go our way, they lose tonight and Fulham get all 3 points, then we're talking nine. Then we go to Huddersfield. You know, again, if you get a point up there, that's actually a victory in my book.
Yes.
A point at Huddersfield would be a good result. They lose this match, all the pressure, it just keeps building and building. We want to get that pressure off so they can just play the rest of the season, similar to what's going on with Leeds. Leeds are not going to, in my opinion, going to get to the playoff spots. They really have no pressure on them. We need to be there at some point, and hopefully it's sooner than later.
For sure.
All right, David, over to you. What do Fulham need to do to win this match? I just asked Giannis, and I'm going to ask you.
I think, you know, they talk about the midfield being their best point. We've got to beat them in midfield. Perhaps a bit like we did against Derby, really. That's where I think the battle was won in that game. So we've got to stop their midfield playing. We've got to be better than them in midfield. We've got to use the ball better. And obviously we've got to be better all over the park, but in the midfield we've got to win this game.
Listen, it's a valid point, and I'm glad that you brought up the Derby match, because if they play like they did against Derby, they will win this game, and they could actually win this comfortably. But the question is, can they play like that, and will Kit set them up similar to that, you know, again, to play like that, you know, again. And part of this, you know, part of that attitude that I saw against Derby County, and I also did see it against Watford, even though they didn't get the result, it's a tenacity. It's, you know, it's a belief, you know, going all out. And I saw that in those two matches. I didn't see it against Bournemouth, but I saw a team that did not let another team play. David, they need to do the exact same thing. That's basically what you're saying here, I believe. They cannot let this team play, because if they let this team play and let them dictate it, it could be a bad night for Fulham Football Club. They cannot let this team dictate the play. That's the way I'm looking at it. All right, David, right back to you. Who's your key player for this match for Fulham?
In that case, it's got to be Scott Parker. He needs to lead the team like he did on Saturday and like he did against Derby, set the example.
Okay.
Simple as.
Yeah, that's actually pretty simple. I totally agree with that. Giannis, how about you?
I'm actually going to say Michael Turner because he had a good game on Saturday. He did a good game on Saturday. He seemed to settle that back four down, and I was really pleased we got him in. I was surprised we got him in too. He's a solid centre-back. And
he's a big guy too, Giannis.
He's a big guy too, and I think that if he can keep that back four calm, I think it's going to be important. It's going to give confidence as well to the midfield. It makes their job a little bit easier because we know they've got to drop and push. But to drop, it's nice to be able to play in front of defenders that know what they're doing, especially a big centre-back who's calm and experienced. I think it's one of those where if we can get off to a nice start early and we keep it tight, we don't concede a goal, I think the longer we get into the game, I think the greater chance we're going to nick it. So I'm going to say Michael Turner might be a key. If we can just keep that, you know, keep that back four calm, I think we should be able to keep a clean sheet tomorrow.
Very good. And I like both of your keys because I see where David's going on it because, again, I think Scott Parker needs to have an exceptional match. But like you said, you know, having someone with experience as a center back, I think, could be huge because I think they're definitely missing that, or they have been missing that, and he might bring that calmness that they need back there. So I see where you're going. So you guys both have mentioned players that could be keys in this match, both of you. All right, let's move on. David, I'll give you the first shot here. What's your starting 11? What formation are you using? This isn't what Kit's going to use. This is what David Holley would use as manager.
Well, it's difficult because, you know, I've been critical of the diamond, but when we switched to the diamond on Saturday, we looked probably more effective. And it's also a counter-argument against when you play with Matt Smith, the logic is to play with width, of course, because you want people getting crosses in. But it worked okay as it was. So I think we're going to see the diamond back again. As I say, well, this is what I'm picking, really. But I, the diamond for me worked a bit better. I think Bettinelli will obviously be in goal. It's interesting at the back because we do have, of course, Amar Bieta available again. Will he gamble and put him back in there instead of Stafleidis? I'm not sure.
Hmm. I think that'd be harsh, though.
That's
an interesting one.
I think... I would probably be minded not to make that change because I don't want to unsettle the back four too much, although, you know, I can understand the logic behind it. So I think he will retain the same back four as he did on Saturday, assuming they're all fit and not tired, and with Bettinelli in goal. And we're going to have the three in midfield, three central midfielders, Parker with Tynecliffe and Fofana, I think we'll see again, to add a bit of strength and pace and je ne sais quoi maybe in midfield. and Brian Ruiz, he's almost put it on a plate that he'd be playing. So
yeah,
why not? Let's not fight against it anymore. Let Ruiz play. Let him hang himself with his own rope. If he takes five more corners that don't beat the first men, then I can moan about it again on Twitter, and I'll be happy, of course. So, and of course, Matt Smith and Ross McCormack up front, I think, because they have a partnership. You can't think of anything else apart from playing Matt Smith, despite some people's reservations about the style of football, because at the end of the day, he's played twice and scored twice. You know, he's played less than two whole games when you add up all his time since he's been back. You know, a few minutes against Watford, half against whoever it was last week, isn't it? And then I've even forgot who we played, but Bournemouth, wasn't it? Yeah. And then,
yeah,
you know, he's played less than two games and he scored twice. So, got to be Matt Smith with Ross McCormack up front. And, of course, they know Leeds, and hopefully they'll know a few tricks how to beat them.
Good point there, David, especially the familiarity that Smith and McCormack have with Leeds. Very good point by you. All right, Giannis, what's your starting 11? What formation would you use? It sounded like before you mentioned the 4-4-2, going to a flat 4-4-2. Is that what you would go with?
Yeah, I'd go with the same formation that they played up at Hillsborough. I've had now a little rethink here. I'd start Grimmer at right back.
Okay.
Stafidis, left back. Amar Bieta is going to be sitting on the bench. Turner and Hutchinson in the middle. So you've got the flat back four. I put Ruiz on the left. I put Hoogland on the right. So that should give us some width. So we sort of abandon the diamond. Tunnicliffe and Parker in as a central two. And that's where I think we can outwork them. And up front, McCormack and Smith. We'll have the wide players that can get the crosses in. We should have the mobility in the centre of the park to go at them. And let's not forget the value of our goalkeeper as well, Bettinelli. I think we should have enough on the bench on a good field, and it will be a good field, where, you know, I'm assuming that players like Roberts and Woodrow and Roddy Yeager will be on the bench, and they're good players to bring off the bench. I wouldn't start Fofana. I'd give Tonicliffe another go.
I was going to ask you about him. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to get a lot of stick for this, but Tonicliffe's our player. You know, we might as well, in each young, let's develop this kid while we can, as opposed to giving playing time to a low knee. I mean, I've got a real thing. It's a little bit, as a coach, I'll tell you, it's a bit like this, Russ. It's like when you've got a game and you call up players from the younger age group because you've got players on vacation. And then you end up starting the players from the year below. The players in your team are going, what the hell? Why are we doing this? Like, we belong in this team, and yet call-ups are starting ahead of us. It's the same premise. I think that's a bit of my bias there. But that's why I would not have Richards and Fofana starting tomorrow. Put them on the bench. And I think that 11 should be okay.
Okay, fair enough. All right. We only have a little over 3 minutes left, so I'm going to go through the predictions from the Fulham supporters that put it up on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Real quickly, Alex Lowy has 2-0 to Fulham. Alf Russell has 3-2 to Fulham. Dean Rosier, depends which Fulham show up. The side that beat Derby will win 4-1. The side against Bournemouth will lose 1-0. I'm gonna go for a bit of an in-between performance, resulting in a 2-1 home win. Turner and McCormack to score. John Mason has 2-1 Fulham, but what do I know? Roger Lewis, a nervy 2-1 win. Ben Reed, briefcase Ben, 3-1 to Fulham. David John Wilson, 1-1. Tomita Rahman, we need to beat them, so I'm going for 2-1. And Lars Anderson has 2-0 to Fulham. Okay, David, to you first. Who do you have in this match?
I'm going to join the majority, and I'm going to say we can win this 2-1 if we play it right.
Okay. Giannis?
I think this is going to be a draw. I think this is going to be a 1-1 draw. I think it's going to work in our favor because I believe we're going to lose tonight. And even if we get a point, that still gives us a gap of, 6 points? So I'm going for 1-1.
Going for 1-1. Okay. All right. I'm going to go for a Fulham victory. And just because you know me, I'm Mr. Positivity. I think this is going to be like the Derby match. I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win 3-1. I'm going to go 3-1. And guess who's going to get a hat trick, David?
Sander Ross.
One from Ruiz, one from McCormack, and one from Smith. How about that?
No, I'm going to go for a hat trick from Ross McCormack just to annoy you.
No, it doesn't annoy me. He doesn't score when you say that.
This is true. He never scores when I predict it. That's right. That's right. Maybe I should predict two from Matt Smith and one from Ross McCormack. How about that?
How about a hat trick from Gabor Kiraly?
Okay, very funny, David. All right. Let's wrap up the show. Great show, guys. It was great to have you both on with me. I really enjoyed it. I hope you guys did as well. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cottage Talk on iTunes and the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. It's a great way to listen back to Cottage Talk. Well, that's it for the show. For David and Giannis, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk. Great show, guys. Cheers.
Thanks. See you, Giannis. See you, Russ. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Boys and girls, London calling.